And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now, Roy Shulman. Roy was born in a suburb of New York City of conservative Jewish parents who had fled Nazi Germany. His Jewish education and formation was received under some of the most prominent rabbis in contemporary American Judaism. He earned an MBA from Harvard Business School. And midway through a career of teaching and consulting, he experienced an unexpected and instantaneous conversion to Christianity. This led to a dramatic refocusing of his activities. And since then, he's pursued theological studies at several seminaries. He's helped produce and host a Catholic television talk show, edited and written for, written several Catholic books and reviews. He's the author of Salvation is from the Jews and Honey from the Rock, which he edited. Roy, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
We want to talk today about the destruction of the Jerusalem Temple, which occurred in 70 A.D. When is that recognized by the Jewish people? I know annually it's an occasion of mourning, but when is it? What day of the year?
Well, it's one of the disasters that befell the Jewish people on a day that is, in a certain sense, a Jewish holiday, which is called Tisha B'Av, which is simply the calendar date in Hebrew, the ninth day of the month of Av. And on that day, basically all of the major disasters that befell the Jewish people were supposed to have occurred, including the destruction of the first temple in 586 B.C. and also the destruction of the second temple in 70 A.D.
So this continues then to be recognized by the Jewish people as a part of their history and part of their ongoing narrative.
That's right. It is a holiday, so to speak. It's a fast day where Jews traditionally fast and engage in other practices associated with mourning. They don't bathe and they don't wear leather shoes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a special synagogue liturgy that's based on Jeremiah's Lamentations, which is lamenting over the initial destruction of Jerusalem and so forth. So it's celebrated as an extremely mournful holiday.
Hmm. Well, many of us don't have an idea of the role that the temple played in first century Palestinian Judaism. How significant was the temple?
I think that the model or analogy for a Catholic to understand that would be if the Mass were done away with, if there were no more sacraments. Because the temple sacrifice in the temple was the sacrament. It
mm-hmm.
was the way for that the Jewish people could remit their sins, could be ritually purified, could reestablish their intimacy with God. And without a temple, there was no sacramental Judaism, just as though, you know, if there were no priesthood or, you know, no masses, there'd be no sacramental Catholicism.
The temple had been destroyed before, in 586 B.C., it was rebuilt, and then in the Second Temple period, was there the fear that they could lose it again?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I don't know whether it was kind of conceived of in that sense. I would be surprised. I would expect that they thought that it would stand until the coming of the Messiah,
right.
And unbeknownst to them, it did stand.
Yeah.
The coming of the Messiah.
Is there anything in biblical prophecy which would require the destruction of the temple at the coming of Messiah?
I'm grasping at that. Nothing comes to mind. Are you aware of anything?
No, I'm not. I know that. In Matthew chapter 24, and John chapter 2, we've got, Mark 13, we've got these prophecies which indicate destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. But that there's nothing, I don't take from that it was necessary. but that the destruction of the temple is seen as a result of the Jewish people not receiving their Messiah.
That's right. You mean in the Christian context,
yeah.
Gospels. And interestingly enough, in the Talmud, you know, which is essentially, in some sense, you can consider a Jewish scripture.
Right.
The Talmud attributes the destruction of the temple. They have a long discussion about, you know, why was the temple destroyed? Why did God allow it to be destroyed? Well, the answer is because of the horrible sin of the Jewish people at the time. Hmm. What was that horrible sin? Hatred without cause.
Huh.
And Jesus himself said, he quotes that line from the Psalms, they hated me without a cause.
Right, right. Interesting. I didn't know that. I hadn't heard that parallel before. I would think then, imagine myself as a Catholic today, and for some reason or other, all of a sudden, the Mass disappears. There's no longer any place for us to offer Christ, represent Christ's sacrifice. It would be fairly, I think I would cease being a Catholic at that point.
Well, there's a way in which Judaism ceased, only one way, but there's a way in which Judaism ceased with the destruction of the temple, like Catholicism would cease if, if there was no more priesthood and no more sacraments.
Right.
And faced with the destruction of the temple, there was actually no way to continue sacramental Judaism. And the rabbis got together and said, what do we do now? You know, how can we maintain Judaism in the absence of a temple? There's no means of ritual purification. There's no means of the remission of sins.
Right.
And they came up with something. They met at something which is known as the Council of Jaffna, because that's where it was held. And they came up with something which has come to be known as Rabbinic Judaism, mm-hmm. which is a kind of a redefinition of Judaism to continue in the absence of the temple. And they set up the system whereby prayer and fasting and almsgiving was supposed to substitute for temple sacrifice.
Hmm.
And that's what we have now is Judaism. For the last 1,939 years, that's what we've had to replace the Judaism that's represented in the Old Testament, which centers around animal sacrifice.
Do we know whether there was any... theologically, I'm just curious how this works out. How is it that prayer, fasting, almsgiving become a sufficient substitute for temple sacrifice?
You mean in the eyes of God, objectively? You mean
as Rabbinic Judaism was being conceived in the aftermath of the destruction of the temple? How did they connect the adequacy of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving with the prior adequacy of temple sacrifice?
I'm tempted to say, what choice do they have?
Yeah.
I mean, they had like three choices: to do that, to give up on Judaism, or to say that Jesus was the Messiah.
Okay.
Because in fact, we know what replaced the temple sacrifice. Mm-hmm. We know exactly the logic of the destruction of the temple shortly after the coming of Christ, because the temple sacrifice was a placeholder until the true sacrifice for the remission of sins, which was Christ. May I add one thing about
please.
That, which I find incredibly fascinating? There, the Talmud, as I said, is this kind of secondary Jewish scripture. They have a discussion in there. It's called the Miracle of the Scarlet Thread. They recount in the Talmud that in the days of the temple, before the sacrifice in the temple, which was performed once a year in the Holy of Holies, the most solemn sacrifice for the remission of the sins of the entire Jewish nation, the one day of the year when the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies, he would tie a scarlet cord around the entrance of the Holy of Holies when he went in to give the sacrifice. And if the sacrifice was accepted by God, that scarlet cord would miraculously turn white. And if it wasn't accepted that year, it would remain red, which happened a few times. But most of the time it would turn white, and when it turned white, all of the people watching, you know, would break into rejoicing because God had accepted the sacrifice and their sins were remitted. The Talmud itself recounts that about 40 years before the destruction of the temple, that miracle ceased to occur and never occurred again.
Oh, wow.
Now, the destruction of the temple was 70 AD, 40 years before would have been right around the time of the crucifixion.
Wow. That's an amazing parallel from independent Jewish testimony.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Wow.
A confirmation, if you will, of Christianity.
Yeah, yeah. How did Christians at the time view the destruction, the siege of Jerusalem, and because up to that point anyways, I imagine that, the lines between, the sociological lines between Christianity and Judaism were not nearly as bright as they are today. Jews and Christians, in Palestine anyways, still probably recognized each other as from a common stock, and Judaism, Christianity was a form of Messianic Judaism.
That's right. I mean, we know that is already reflected in the Book of Acts, that the early, of course, the first generation of Christians were Jews who were followers of Jesus, and, you know, whether from during his lifetime or from the preaching of the apostles, and they still went to temple, right? They still went to synagogue. They were only finally thrown out of the synagogue around 130 AD, and it was associated with the second destruction of Jerusalem, with the final destruction of Jerusalem in about 132 AD, precisely around the issue of a Messiah, because what happened was Israel was under Roman occupation. This pretender to be the Messiah emerged, who was named Simon Bar Kokhba.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name he took. It was a kind of honorific name, Son of the Star. And he said he was the Messiah and was going to overthrow the yoke of the Roman oppression, domination.
He had the support of a major rabbi, too.
He had the support of the biggest rabbi of the day, who was Rabbi Akiva.
Mm-hmm.
And when Rabbi Akiva threw his support behind him, that was it. And all of the Jews followed him as the Messiah and basically, therefore, took up arms against the Romans. All of the Jews except, that is, the Christians, the Jewish Christians, because for them to join the revolt would be to acknowledge Bar Kokhba as Messiah, which would be apostasy because they knew Jesus was the Messiah. So they were the only ones who refused. And that, of course, was a point of great, you know, a great sore point because they were the only ones who didn't join the revolt. So it's at that point that they were excommunicated from the synagogue.
Well, so between the destruction of the temple in 70 AD and the Bar Kokhba revolt of, what's it, 132?
132 to 135, yeah.
Yeah. Between that time, you could still, Jews could still see Christians as kind of a Messianic Judaism and disagree with them, Christians were still considered plausibly Jews.
Well,
in Palestine, anyway.
We know even from the Gospels, we know that at the time of Jesus, Judaism wasn't monolithic, right? There were the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the Essenes.
Right.
And the Jewish Christians were like another sect. And there were always, we also know, by the way, from the Book of Acts, that there were always pretenders to be the Messiah who came along,
mm-hmm.
right? It's in the Book of Acts that
Thutis.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
This was just like another sect of Jews who followed yet another pretender to be the Messiah.
Right, right. When the temple was destroyed, do we know if Christians made hay of that in their presentation of the gospel?
I certainly don't know if that was the case at the time. I know that in the ensuing decades and centuries, when the polemics got rather heated between the Jews and the Christians, some of the early church fathers did make hay of that.
Yeah,
did.
Okay.
But quite, in some sense, correctly. I mean, sometimes they were somewhat more polemical and vehement than we would have liked. I'm thinking particularly of John Chrysostom, but in a some sense correctly, because it was a sign that Jesus was the Messiah.
Yeah.
The fact that Jerusalem was destroyed.
So it was a correct, you know, it was a correct reading of history.
It was a correct reading of history. They could have perhaps done without some of the fiery language associated
with it. Right. Now, rabbinic Judaism, does rabbinic Judaism continue to be plagued by this, the problem of false messianic expectations? I mean, I know later on there's the incidence of Zabtai Zvi, or however it's pronounced, the Zabtai.
Yeah.
But is that an unusual phenomenon after?
No, it was always. It's been a recurring problem. You correctly mentioned Zabtai Zvi, who had several hundreds of thousands of followers in the end. You had, in our day, Rabbi Schneerson.
Yeah, that's right. Menachem Schneerson.
The Hasidic rabbi who many thought was the Messiah.
Yeah. Roy, hold it there. We'll come back, continue the conversation. My guest, Roy Shulman, talking about the destruction of the Jerusalem Temple in 70 A.D. Roy is the author of an outstanding book called Salvation is from the Jews. And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me is Roy Shulman, author of Salvation is from the Jews and Honey from the Rock. Roy and I talking about the destruction of the Jerusalem Temple in 70 A.D. This time of year, it is recognized by the Jewish people. And was there? Do we know enough about the growth of Christianity to know the impact of the destruction of the temple on the growth, the numerical growth of Christianity?
Meaning that it increased it because Judaism was no longer available to Jews?
I mean that people saw the destruction of the temple, connected it with Christ's prophecies, and made some decision that joining the Christian community was the way to go.
I would be surprised if that was a significant effect.
Yeah.
I don't know that for a fact, but just drawing on my experience.